The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Everybody loves a train. It's on tracks. It tends to run by and large on time, and it really takes the stress out of travelling. I'm saying that because sitting beside me here is Éireann O'Deireann chairperson Steve Murphy. Steve, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
I want to talk to you first of all about your own background. You were at one time what looked like a British Rail lifer.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, yes, I grew up in East London. My parents came over from Ireland, actually, in the 1950s. I grew up in East London and university in Wales. And then British Rail at the time, as it was, this was sort of 91, had one of the best graduate training schemes. So I joined really for the graduate training scheme, then got involved and found it just very, very interesting. And one of the things that happened in the UK was it just went through lots of interesting cycles in the railway. So we had privatisation. And actually, at the moment, it's coming back into national control under the new government.
Yeah, I mean, there is so much rail in Britain. When you're coming through, maybe when the underground goes overground at certain places and you're mixing with the big boys on rail.
Yes.
It's massive.
Yes, yes. A really extensive system. And I was really lucky. I had 10 years, I guess, after I graduated, ended up as managing director of a very innovative company, Chiltern Railways, did lots of good stuff. And at exactly that time, I got the opportunity of a lifetime. I was asked to come to Irish Rail in an operational role. So this is actually my second time with Irish Rail now as chair. Yeah. And I ran all the services out of Houston. And that was an incredible education from me because I came from the UK system that had kind of been split apart where the infrastructure has been run by Network Rail, Railtrack at the time, and the operations were separate. And I came to Irish Rail and suddenly I was in charge of everything. And it was just accelerated learning. And I worked with, I would say, the best people I've worked with in my career.
Now, if people are trying to understand what happened in Britain, I mean, here in Ireland, we used to have the ESB who provided our electricity.
Yeah.
And then they split that up so that competition could come in.
Yes.
And people are wondering, was that any good for us at all? Because the ESB was doing quite a good job. Everyone had power. When things went down, they were repaired quickly. Mm. And now we have a whole pile of people flogging us exactly the same electricity under different brands and at different prices. Yes. That's really what happened with ticketing in Britain.
Yeah, well, it was very interesting because I think 20 different train companies sprang out of privatisation. Everyone's got a personal view, of course. My own personal view is that there were a number that were really, really innovative, did some great things, very customer focused. British Rail actually was quite an effective organisation, but struggled sometimes both for funding, couldn't access private funding for new trains, for example. And you might say that customer service wasn't necessarily top of the agenda. So there were some companies did that really well, I think, through privatisation. It would also be fair to say, I think, that others didn't. And so it was a mixed view. Mm. One of the opportunities I got as I went into this world was to work globally because around the world, everyone got interested in what was going on in the UK. It was something of an experiment, I guess. And I got to experience Japanese railway, the Swiss, the Germans, MTR in Hong Kong, who I worked for many years. And that exposure to different models of working the railway was really interesting. Some private, some public. So it was interesting.
Yeah. Is there a generality around the world that the state kind of controls networks? Is that the typical way, irrespective of whether the rolling stock is privately owned or publicly owned?
Yeah, it's very interesting. So there are examples around the world of very, very exactly that model, Pat. So very effective state-controlled railways. I would say the Swiss SBB, probably one of the best examples of that. Equally well, if you look at Japan, you have these amazing private companies that were carved out from state control around about 40 years ago now, who are now hugely successful financially and have a really interesting but different relationship with the state. So the state still gets the service it wants. It's probably the best railway in the world, but it's privately delivered and they can raise their own funds. So different models I've seen work around the world.
Have you been to China yet?
Actually, I worked for Hong Kong MTR for a number of years and just about got over the border once to
Shenzhen.
Because,
I mean, they are building thousands of kilometres of high-speed rail and doing it very quickly.
Absolutely. I mean, it's utterly remarkable, the pace of things in China. It's absolutely remarkable. And actually, for geographically, obviously, a very, very big country, their strategic focus on rail is really interesting.
The idea is you can get from one end of a province in China, which might be a couple of thousand kilometres, a matter of hours.
Correct.
And you don't take a plane.
No,
you take a train.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly what they do. And of course, they've joined up as I think as the most advanced economies have joined up and understood the arguments about sustainability, understood the arguments about housing in particular and how railways enable solutions to those subjects.
Now, you inherit, as chairman of Irish Rail, you inherit a network that was built by the British.
This is true.
I mean, there are no new lines, are there?
Well, Actually, a lot of what we're doing now is putting back what was a vast network. So I was actually down in the chief executive, Jim Mead, who's done a fantastic job for us. I was in one of his offices in Limerick, and there was a map of Ireland's railways around about 1900, and see the extent of the network. So you're right, Pat. A lot of what we're doing is putting back lines that actually should have been then. We should have retained, I suppose.
Yeah. And one of the problems is once you forsake the permanent way and sell it off, to get it back, you've got to demolish houses, you've got to buy out households, maybe factories even, in order to penetrate again along the permanent way.
So actually, the approach Irish Rail have taken to this with government and with NTA is very joined up. And actually, I'm pleased to say the protection of the permanent way you refer to there, Pat, has been, I would say, more effective than I've seen in the UK. There was more selling off in the UK of railway permanent way. So it's relatively speaking, easier to reinstate. I also think in Ireland, where we're not putting back railways, but identify the opportunity for greenways, I think that's a great strategic use of the same space.
I cavil a little bit with the idea of dedicating permanent ways to greenways because, you know, you never get them back. A bit like some of the cycleways that may not have been a great idea in Dublin. But once they're given, they are never taken back.
Yes.
And the problem is that we've got a future of automation in transport. Mm-hmm. You're going to have autonomous... I can imagine having vehicles, they don't even need tracks.
Yes.
They could be on, you know, solid carriageway,
correct,
automatically coming every 3 or 4 minutes. No drivers.
Correct.
Very
correct.
Comfortable, very reliable.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's the future. So this, you know, railways will be an autonomous system, as I guess the road system will be eventually. And you're also absolutely right. In fact, you articulated our policies, Irish Rail, as far as greenways go. So we, obviously, as you might imagine, are desperately keen to expand and reintroduce railways. But if we get to certain areas where we've got a land bank and there is no viable way it's going to be a railway, then actually the greenway is a much better use of the area, I would say. Mm.
Now, talk to me about the immediate challenges. I mean, we hear regularly of, you know, signalling difficulties, capacity in Dublin City, where the Dart and mainline rail intersect. These are problems that need to be solved. I mean,
absolutely,
there was supposed to be a two-story set of platforms at Connolly Station. Hasn't happened. Is it going to happen?
Yeah. So I would say the strategy that's been laid out through the All-Ireland Strategic Rail Review, Irish Rail working with government and NTA, is one of the best railway strategies I've seen anywhere in the world, actually. I've been fortunate enough to work around the world. So all of the things pretty much that we need to do are captured in there. Now, of course, they're not all funded. They haven't all been developed as projects. But the thinking is very, very good. And I suppose specifically just taking your example there of the need to four-track out of Connolly, for example, that's an absolutely key constraint.
What do you have to do to do that? Is it two-story? Because, I mean, you can't buy the land around. It's not available.
Yeah. So we're examining all those options at the moment, actually. And in the All-Ireland Strategic Rail Review, the commitment to four-tracking is absolutely there. We think there's possibilities to do it either way, actually. So we think it's possible to do it at grade, as we would say. Not easy, a complicated project. And actually, it was a really good worked example because when we come into, I guess, this point last year and we were finalising plans to get the hourly service in between Dublin and Belfast, we knew strategically we simply had to get an hourly service into Dublin and Belfast. And today we're seeing 40% growth, passenger growth, from just doing that in just the last year, and that will grow. But it also exposed the operational constraints. And very unfortunately, we suffered with poorer punctuality for a period until we restored the timetable. So that was a good example of why we need it. But at the same time, we're also seeing that judgment about increasing the customer demand was also correct. And it's absolutely there.
Now, back to the future. I saw much heralding of the opening of the station at Woodbrook.
Yes.
And I took a train to Woodbrook as a child to watch the Irish Open at Woodbrook.
Yes.
So, you know, back to the future. There was one there. And now... You know,
absolutely, but and it's kind of developed. It develops. I mean, I was fortunate to be there myself a week ago from last Sunday, and a brilliant event. And it felt, what I loved about it was it felt like the community actually opened the station rather than the railway opening the station. And as I came into Woodbrook, you know, you go from the road infrastructure on one side, superb housing development in the middle, railway on the other side. It's absolutely how things should be done. And actually often aren't done quite as well as that, quite as joined up. So it was brilliant. But as you say, there's nothing completely new in the world. And actually a lot of what we're doing is putting back infrastructure that frankly should be there.
Now, what about single tracking? I mean, on that very line down heading south, there's single tracking.
Yeah.
So what
correct.
To do about that?
Correct. So again, I'm a railway operator by trade, I guess. So single line is the one thing you're always targeting to deal with, to double track, because it's obviously a key operational constraint. And we have...
How many bottlenecks do you have around the country?
We have a lot. And, you know, we're obviously great double track, Dublin-Cork and Dublin-Belfast, the spine of the country. But when you go west to Galway, you know, our aspirations for much quicker journey times and much higher frequency, or to Limerick, and even, as you say, on the extension out on the Dart, we've still got single line sections. And so that's a real priority for us, to double those sections. That means more reliable trains, more frequent trains. When we do have disruption, we'll recover much more quickly.
I mean, commuter rail is growing. There's huge demand for it. People often complain it's packed all the time.
Yes.
What can you do about that? Frequency, frequency, frequency. But if you're all coming into the same bottleneck, you can't increase frequency.
Correct. So frequency is highly desirable, but increasing capacity can also be achieved in a pretty major way with the right design of train. So the latest order we've got of the new Dart fleet, 185 carriages now have been ordered.
Are we all standing?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's obviously for different markets, the train has to serve different purposes. So obviously for journey times in a metro area, if the journey time is around 15, 20 minutes,
who cares?
Then if you stand, but you need to stand comfortably, the information needs to be good. Obviously on in-city journeys, completely different, or regional journeys. So in my view, the new Dart trains that are coming in, and we're testing now, we've got 15 in the country on test, and they're testing well, which is really good, manufactured by Alstom, are performing really well. And I think they're a really significant upgrade on the current Darts that have served us incredibly well.
Now, the old Dart carriage is still running, and there's no reason why they, if they're well-maintained, no reason why they shouldn't. Yep. There are 747s in the sky that are decades old, well-maintained, virtually no original parts left, but that's by the way. So what about what's coming? Are we going to get a hybrid? Are we going to get battery Darts? Yep. What's on the horizon?
So all of that in short. So I think, again, under Jim Mead's leadership, the Irish Rail team have proven to be innovators in terms of rolling stock decisions and deployment. And I think very intelligently, they've gone for a battery electric solution. So the first trains that come in will be all electric and run the existing Dart system. But we have the technological capability with the battery facility that we'll be able to extend out those services, which is a key part of our plan, greater Dart, longer Dart.
So does it make economic sense, rather than electrifying the lines, that you battery the trains and they carry on with the normal diesel network?
Correct. So the battery allows us to replace old and unsustainable diesel trains with battery electric trains. But selectively, if we don't need to put up overhead wires, which is one of the most complex and expensive tasks that railway can do, actually it gives us that option. So I think it was a great decision by the team, and those trains are now in and on test and being tested with their battery capability, which is going really well.
When will Irish Rail increase capacity, asks someone here. Portlaoise to Dublin servicing Naas, Adamstown, Seven Mills, some early morning trains and late afternoon have only three carriages packed beyond what is safe. I emailed Irish Rail and the Department of Transport on this, but I got no answer.
Yeah, so excellent question. And pretty much the entirety of our strategy is increasing capacity. We do that in the first case by the new fleet that's coming in. So the fleet will carry, even if they're not longer trains, will carry very significantly more people comfortably because they're just better designed for carrying in metro areas. What that will also allow us to do, though, is cascade existing trains onto some of our regional services. So if we talk about Portlaoise, for example. So it's a win-win from that point of view. So in the first case, it's absolutely about rolling stock, allows us to increase capacity very significantly. And those trains are already in the country and being tested. But absolutely, in longer term, it's about more frequency. So it's, for example, it's getting all the in-city services up to hourly at the very least and starting to look at half hourly.
Can Steve confirm there will be nothing on the line from Claremorris to Sligo so that we can have a greenway in the meantime and eventually alongside?
I think probably you answered that even better than I did. So the extension of the Western Rail Corridor as a railway is absolutely our priority. We think it's a crucial build on the success of the existing Western Rail Corridor that I remember working on 20 years ago when I was here in an operational role. So that's very much the priority.
Now, what about trains to Donegal?
Yeah, as railway people, we want to put new railway everywhere. Or, again, actually come back to your earlier theme, replacing a railway that was in Donegal, of course, not that long ago.
Yeah, and what route would that be?
Yet to be defined. So in the All Ireland Strategic Rail Review, there's a whole range of things from existing projects close to delivery to some that have well worked through business case to others that are being optioneered. One that's more advanced, obviously, is the Navan route, for example. But in time, we want to look at all of those options.
What is the relationship with rail north of the border? I mean, we know we have the Enterprise going back and forth, a great cooperation. How much other rail is there left in Northern Ireland?
Quite a bit. And again, we work very closely with our colleagues in TransLink and actually exchange. We have board meetings where we exchange ideas, plan for the future. And there's a really exciting project to replace the rolling stock on the Enterprise service. We've managed to go to Owley, as I said, last year, but we haven't got the trains on it that we'd really like. TransLink agree, and we're jointly managing that project. And then they have their own regional network in Northern Ireland, which works extremely well, actually. It's a very good network. They would like more of it, of course.
But, can I get the train to Derry?
Yes, you can. Absolutely.
So therefore, I'm virtually in Donegal.
Yeah. You're quite right, but I can't argue with
that. So I'm wondering, the key to a lot of this is having very reliable high-speed trains that are safe.
Yes.
So what is the high-speed element of your plans?
Yeah. Speed's an interesting one because, you know, again, working in the UK context, you can chase, you know, the very highest speeds that railway technology will deliver, but it's always important to match that with the geography you're trying to operate over. So it needs to be fast enough to deliver the customer outcome. And one of the main things I'm continuing to spend my time with Irish Rail checking is it's about the customer outcomes. So a top speed is one thing. But actually what customers want to know is how is my journey time going to improve? And of course, is it going to be ultra reliable? So high speed in an international context can be anything from, I guess, around 140 miles an hour up to over 300 miles an hour. I think it's fit for purpose for the geography we're talking about and the markets we need to serve. And of course, in all of that, how many times do you want to stop the train? Because clearly, if you've got an ultra high speed railway, you know, you don't want to be stopping.
The ambition, say, Dublin Belfast or Dublin Cork, what would it be? Yeah. Would that be very high speed or hopefully?
Quite a bit faster than today, I think. Okay. I can safely say that. Yeah, absolutely. But again, with the emphasis, again, if I take other models around the world that have worked very well, tilting technology on the train actually, in certain cases, has achieved more than higher speed. So
you don't have to slow down.
Exactly right. So you're working with the contours of the geography.
I have family living in Boston. Most of their local trains are double-decker with serious capacity. Any prospects for that?
I think for us, we can see lots of opportunities, if I'm using the jargon, at grade improvements of our infrastructure. We've done well to protect the land bank generally, I would say, Irish Rail. And actually going double-decker, there are a lot more constraints because we're quite an old railway. We're built in Victoria.
And I know all the bridges.
And you know all the bridges.
They're all numbered often trucks get stuck.
They do indeed. So I think there'll be more at-grade than double-decker.
The Oran Mór train to and frequent, treated as an intercity but only 8 minutes from Galway, should be commuter and higher frequency, i.e. hourly, often packed trains, not enough capacity, only 5 bike parking bays, car parked is packed, no buses to the station itself, bad planning.
I agree absolutely with the diagnosis of that and all the things that need to be addressed. The good news is that starting with the redevelopment of Kent Station in Galway, we have a superb new station. That's just the start. We then want to remove the constraints of the single line and the passing lips and so on, create a double line railway out to the west. That will unlock the capacity and the frequency.
Yeah.
But even before that, the new trains will also
help. And the question everyone's answered, catering on the trains.
Yes. I think I can safely say I'm a huge advocate of catering on the trains. We need to get it back in short, Pat, and we're working to do exactly that.
Steve Murphy, who's the chairperson of Irish Rail, Ian Rowe there. And Steve, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.